Hello, my beautiful butterflies. No new two chunks up for you today because we're busy doing things for you. Not really. It's mostly real life stuff. Boring, lame, dumb. Anywho, we decided to treat you to a little something special, something that was dropped on the Imagine Dungeons feed, something Carter worked very hard on that we think even if you haven't listened to Imagine Dungeons yet, you will still find very interesting because, well, Carter's very interesting. And two, it's a lot of fun of a deep dive, not only into our characters, but into who we are through Carter's eyes. So here's that very special episode, and we'll be back with regularly scheduled Two Chunks programming next week. I love you.
I love storytelling. I love storytelling so much, however I can get it. One of my favorite moments in life is when I end the chapter of a book, finish an episode of a show, or leave the theater. Stepping from one immersive world and entering my own reality is akin to what it feels like for me when I leave the ocean. For a few minutes, after my feet hit the beach, I'm still drenched. My wet feet become a dry sand rideshare as I make my way to my towel. Depending on how long I've been in the ocean before my dry venture, I may be walking in a not-so-straight line, mimicking the pull of my previous stay. And even when I reach my towel and pat myself to dry off, even when I've baked in the sun for some time, there will inevitably be parts of that ocean experience that stick to me. Be it some sand, or water in my ears, salt in my hair, or seaweed in my trunks. Stories do this. I love stories. I also love a cold open. Carter here, and I'm going to take just a moment of your time to be Dr. Willis. I want to spend some time with you combining both research and experience to help unpack the phenomenon that is Dungeons and Dragons. 36 years of life, 10 years of teaching communication, and a dissertation on charisma have provided me a unique look at the correlation of who we are and what D&D provides. So, I play a character on this show, Donnie, and I'll spend plenty of time talking about him. But really, I also want to talk about my friends that I play with, the whole crew, and our DM. I think what I hope this podcast episode is for you is an intimate look, kind of like what Doge did when he did that Behind the Music episode that I loved so much. I've actually listened to that episode several times because that's my vibe. I love hearing about the stories behind storytelling and those influences. It's actually something I've been fascinated with my entire life. And then I go to school, discover, hey, I think I like to teach. I think I like to teach about how we learn about each other. And then I grow, and then I go to therapy, and I start to learn about myself. And then I play D&D, and all of it just has these beautiful cross-sections. And I think it's so great. So I also hope that this episode for you, if you're listening and maybe have never played before, is an invitation to dive deep. Give it a shot. D&D is growing more and more popular because really generations right now that are starting to run the world, millennials, Gen X, Gen Alpha, Gen Z, these are generations of people that really have something to do and some interest in mental health. And I think D&D can provide that a lot, but I don't want to get us too scattered. So let's talk a little bit about the kind of things that I do in the classroom, teaching communication, and how I feel like that has a lot to do with Dungeons and Dragons. One of my favorite courses to teach is Advanced Comm Theory. It's a grad level course. And the very first thing we do, night one, is I hand them an alignments chart. If you haven't seen that before, this is our X and Y axis. We've got 9 options here of everything from lawful to chaotic, good to evil. And then you kind of have to find yourself within these 9 frames. If that sounds familiar to you, maybe you have some familiarity with the Enneagram. We'll kind of bring that up too. And usually when I tell students, when we're trying to discover our worldview, those foundational parts of us that help us understand how we communicate and how we get in relationships with people, when I'm trying to explain these things to them, I try and tell them that it's not a box. Like, there's a lot of personality tests out there, everything from BuzzFeed quizzes to Enneagram to Myers-Briggs. It's not a box. It's more of a lane. So lanes are suggestions. And those of us that know how to navigate our lives to a certain extent know at which points we need to be in what lanes. So I hope you don't feel like you're in a box, because D&D certainly is not that. It is absolutely open. But when I have my students do these alignments charts, I have them first think of their favorite character from a story. I usually have them stray from someone who exists, like an actual person in history, but they can do that too, and inevitably they will. But a lot of times I'll get things like Thor or Sully or Annalise Keating from How to Get Away with Murder. Shonda Rhimes tends to have a lot of influence out there in my grad level students. And we try and place them on this alignments chart. Really what I'm doing with my students in this case is a bit of preparing them for Dungeons and Dragons, because that's what the alignments chart is for. Dungeons and Dragons as a world is asking you, before you even enter this world and navigate its relationships, it's asking for you to have some level of understanding of who you are. The interesting thing about this is that maybe for some of us, that's like our first practice of this when we play D&D. Granted, we probably do this all the time because as humans, we're constructing our realities one by one, especially in different relationships. There's a theory called the coordinated management of meaning. Pearson Cronin put this together a few decades ago, but CMM, coordinated management of meaning, essentially says that in our relationships, we are co-constructing realities. So if you've ever had that situation to where there's certain jokes that you can say with a certain person in your life or certain things that y'all can talk about because you have hobbies that align, that's y'all's reality. And it's growing all the time. The more intimate your relationship, the more and more we get to add to what is a growing world of that co-constructed reality. And so when we're doing this with ourselves, right, when we're trying to understand who we are through D&D, it's a pretty fascinating experience. Because really, when I'm doing this exercise with students, having them do this alignments chart, it's a bit of metatextual work that I'm doing on my own, as if my classroom is somewhat of a petri dish. Because inevitably, the people that my students choose, that is their favorite character currently, my students either can confess to feeling like they are the same person on that alignments chart. Very often, people are picking someone who is chaotic good. So willing to do good in spite of anything that might be in their way. Good for the sake of good. Good for the sake of humanity. Whether the laws of that land say it's good or not, or if it's evil, they're going to do good anyways, because that's what they feel convicted to do. And so a lot of the times my students are picking people that they either feel like they currently emulate or hope to become. That's just a natural thing that we do, a natural thing that we're drawn towards. I talked about those movie experiences, right? When we walk out of the theater, there's been plenty of times that I've walked out of some high stakes heist type movie. And I start to think about, what if the guy next to me at the urinal after we're unloading that extra large Dr. Pepper together, what if the guy next to me is about to just rip his face off, some latex thing, and it's somebody completely different, right? Or how would I steal from this local bakery? How could I get away with something like that? I just kind of take these bits of that ocean experience and integrate it into my current life. So D&D is asking us this from the jump. Find yourself on that alignments chart. So let's also talk about something different here too. Because really what I want to focus on a lot in this is the relationships that we have to each other, and how D&D can be so interesting in that way. I would recommend, if you've never played before, usually, naturally, this is what's happening already. You need to play with people that you know, or at least most people in your D&D party should be people that you're familiar with. Granted, it could be a super interesting experience to play with strangers, because you're going to start to see some correlations maybe between their characters and who you are figuring out them to be. But I suggest playing with people you know. And the people that I get to play with as Donnie, as Darnyark Gushkala, I know very well. And even they have unique experiences to each other. Jordan and Doge were roommates for a long time. Gage gets added in because my relationship to Gage when I first met him is he was a student in one of my classes. I wouldn't be surprised if we did this activity, this find yourself on the alignments chart activity in that class that I had with Gage. And then Gage and Jordan and Doge are really good friends. They live really close together. And so they have a lot of time together. They have those relationships. The Kellys are married and have 3 children. That's its own separate dynamic. Vince and I have known each other for about half of our lives. And then I meet Mariah around the same time. So I've known them for well over a decade. All these fascinating cross-sections. And so we get to see our characters in this new world interact with each other. And inevitably, there's going to be some bleeding through. And that's perfectly fine. And I think that's what makes Dungeons & Dragons beautiful, is these co-constructed realities that we have in real life show up in this fantasy world. And then Gage gets to just kind of make the playground for us. And he does such a good job with that. You even look at like careers of everybody that is in this party. Our DM, Sue and Donnie, are all current or past educators. So do we ever hear that? Like if you listen to the podcast, can you tell? I feel like you certainly can with Gage, especially when he's dealing with the rowdy bunch that is this party that wants to get away with everything. Gage kind of grounds us and brings us back to center. There's been a couple of sessions to where we wanted to break the game and we weren't allowed to because Teacher Gage said, no, thank you. And we were a little bit frustrated and we got over it. But that's part of the thing that you have to do when you're a dungeon master, when you're a world creator. So myself as an educator gave my friends a prompt. I asked them a couple of things. I wanted to know their Enneagram. And again, y'all, I've known these people for quite some time. I already had a hunch as to maybe where they might align on this personality test. And then I asked them, how do they go about character creation? Like, where do you all start from? I think that's really interesting. What are your foundational ingredients for making some new experience, becoming someone different? Do they start with class or race? Do they think of a funny name and try to build around that? Or do they just begin with a story and then everything else starts around there? I think that's a fascinating experience. I asked Gage to give me some intel into world building. I also asked them, as I said before, their Enneagram. So I kind of want to go through each of them and give you their Enneagram number as they understand it, and a little bit of how they create their characters. And let's look for some overlap. I think that's super fascinating. You can imagine that when I give a prompt to this class of students, right? Everybody that I play Imagine Dungeons with, that there might be somebody who responds first. If you have listened to the episode at all or listened to our seasons at all and you get to know Glint, I don't think you would be surprised to find out that Glint, also known as Doge, responded to me first and had the longest reply, incredibly thought out. Now, Doge, as identified on the Enneagram, is a 5-wing 4. And the 5-wing 4 can be called many things, y'all. There's a bunch of stuff out there, but we'll make it short. The iconoclast, I think that sounds like something that Glint would make in general to equip to Davy. But the iconoclast in this sense is a 5-wing 4. Is understanding they try and conserve energy. They have a longing for depth, meaning, self-expression. It's someone who thinks in really original ways, often feels profoundly different from those around them. They're drawn to things that are strange, complex, unexplored, all across the board. Ideas, art, experiences. They make fascinating artists. I love this. What a great thing for Doge. What a great thing for Glint. And here's the thing with D&D. it kind of meets us wherever we are. I firmly believe this. We're going to see in a little bit that because of us recording this podcast and having these sessions for over a year, while we're changing in real life, our characters are changing in the game because our real life informs this fantasy. Our real realities inform how we approach these stories. When I asked Doge, and I'll, again, make this a little bit shorter than what he gave. It was a wonderfully thorough reply. So A plus, Doge. But when Doge replied to me in terms of what he tries to do for Glint, he says he always starts with character. He tried that with Glint and to a much lesser degree with another character that we had in a one-shot to find a place of tension and try and build a character from there. Doge's next sentence is so very Doge. He says, character wants X, but Y, right? He's already building a formula, much like Glint would. One of the things I love the most about Glint is that Glint is very much like Doge. And so in my present reality, I love Doge very much. So I love Glint, and I love seeing the ways that Doge tries to challenge himself with this character. For Glint, the character wants X but Y is that Glint wants desperately to be an inventor, but he's terrible at it. Doge's original idea for Glint's status as an inventor was that all his ideas for inventions came from the fact that he was a half-elf who grew up in a halfling world. Dreamed of making a bed that goes all the way to your feet or bowls that hold a whole meal rather than just a bite. So he's going through all this stuff that he doesn't want to get too into Buddy the Elf, but he's a bit of a fish out of water. I'm not going to go deep into psychoanalyzing my friends because those are the kind of intimate conversations that we get to have for each other that aren't really broadcast on podcasts. But from what I know of Doge, I bet there's parts of his life that he feels a little bit like a fish out of water. That he's just trying to make things work. He would go on to say that Glint desperately wants to be considered one of the foremost minds in Eberron. That's the world that we are using, the foundation of the world creation from Gage. But does he have what it takes? That's that question that Glint keeps asking himself. Will he ever invent anything himself to take his place in history? Does Davy count for this? Since even Glint himself doesn't fully understand the mechanism powering Davy's consciousness. There's just all these wonderful tensions and questions that Glint and Doge ask themselves in this sense. One of the most encouraging and discouraging lessons that I have in class when we talk about things like persuasion is dialectics, which is essentially some theorists saying, and I believe this to be true, it's a more objective truth, meaning a singular truth over interpretive. Interpretive would mean your truth is your truth, and that's the way things go with dynamic relationships. Objective truth, the singular truth that in dialectics, we're always navigating tension. Cognitive dissonance comes from this too. When we have warring beliefs, and it feels like Doge wants to build a character that has two separate beliefs that he's always kind of working against. The belief in himself, the belief in his abilities. Can he have this if he does not feel capable? These dialectics, these tensions are fascinating. And the DM kind of becomes the puppet master for that. But ultimately, Dungeons and Dragons, I've had experience as a DM myself, and it feels like the world is built at times more by the players in it than by the creator, more by their actual experiences than by what was created as an experience for that person. And that's a fascinating thing in itself. Doge said that he thinks his favorite characters are ones who have that internal dissonance. They believe something about themselves that they desperately want to be true, but it's not yet. We're not to that point yet. He likes forcing Glint into situations where he has to confront the dissonances in his life. That is good for Glint. My guess is that is also good for Doge. Finally, he said, once he has that character realized, it came time to mechanically figure out how he would work. Thankfully, all the things that he wanted fit pretty neatly into that artificer class. So let's go on to Vince. Vince is one of the closest relationships in my life. I've known him for a long time. I've seen several iterations of him as he's grown. And this particular character for him, as he would confirm in his reply to my prompt, is hitting Vince at a really interesting and pivotal time in his life. Vince already had a sweet little boy, and now he has two more kiddos. And so as a father of three, Vince starts to share a little bit about his experience of creating the character Ridley. He said it was a unique D&D character for him. In the past, many of his creations were about some concept that he wanted to explore mixed with some new character class that he hadn't played before. So Vince is looking into characters and he's down for some new experiences. He knows that Ridley was kind of a wrestle with fatherhood for him and a care for his work. We understand that from Ridley's ultimately as a paladin choosing a good sale or being a salesman as a bit of his due north. He'd become a dad in the last 5 years of his life and added new kids in the last year. So that's been challenging but rewarding, he says. He liked the idea of having a character who missed the fatherhood part of life and actually realized that he missed on something that ended up being something he really wanted. It's been a way for Vince to remind himself that what he gets to do every day is pretty special. Think about that relationship that Ridley has with Snaps. That while Ridley is not Snap's dad, sometimes it feels like he has to be his character caretaker. And Ridley, in many ways, has to take care of anyone that's ever been introduced as his actual blood relatives. Even a spoiler alert sister that shows up at some point. He's got a brother-in-law that he basically has tried to help bring back from the dead. We talk about the class itself. So as for Tortles, he just wanted to play one. Thought it was a good circumstance where he was reading a magazine. It's so sweet, but he was reading a magazine with his son and learned about the Olive Ridley Sea Turtle. And the rest just kind of wrote itself from there. Vince would identify himself as a six-winged seven. This would be called like the buddy in some circles. At their core, the six-winged seven craves security and belonging. That seven wing softens a six's sometimes characteristic of worry with sociable, optimistic energy. That kind of personality tends to be warm, funny, and genuinely invested in their communities. Kind of person who makes everybody feel included. That tension, that dialectics we talked about for usually this personality type, is internal. They want adventure and lightness, but can't quite silence the voice asking, what if something goes wrong? At their best, they're loyal, engaging, and surprisingly resilient. I would qualify Ridley as this. I think a lot of what we've seen of Ridley is him at his best, but this character arc certainly has provided a lot of dynamic. And so we start to build these things, right? We'll get into Donnie in a little bit, my own character, which you know I know the most intimately because I know myself the most intimately over all of my friends. But when we add new variables, when we add these relationships together, that's when things become innumerable. The dynamic becomes perpetual. Like we can't possibly quantify all of it. That's one of my favorite things about stories. It's like an art gallery. You can stand there and stare at a portrait and somebody can have a completely different experience of the same painting that you're looking at. That's how people are. And we've got to be open to that. And D&D teaches us that. There is not one way to do things. If we wanted that, we might just turn on Friends. If you want to have a static character that just stays the same, that you can expect what happens and have that familiarity, it is the sitcom. It's the person that you can find the comfort in doing the same thing over and over again. But D&D kind of asks us to live. Just kind of have our lives play out in a completely different world. So we've got Vince and Doge, Glint and Ridley. Let's add a few more people in here. We'll go ahead and do me, Donnie. Donnie was interesting for me. I'm a 9-wing-8. So let's talk about this. The 9-wing-8 is essentially called like the referee. If you ever listen to Two Chunks and a Hunk, I had a great conversation with Jordan about this recently, that I tend to be a referee in the sense between Doge and Jordan, because I feel like really the three of us need each other in that scenario of having these conversations. Sometimes those boys can be on separate sides and I tend to be right there in the middle. Instinctual is how 9-wing-8s can be described. The 8-wing lends to the 9 being a bit stubborn and having a grounded quality, but also they're easygoing until they're not. 9-wing-8 is kind of like Bruce Banner. We're good until you mess with the people that I like. And the secret is I'm always angry. This type can appear almost paradoxical, laid back and accommodating on the surface, but with a quite immovability underneath. They don't pick fights, but they don't back down from them either. Is this already starting to sound familiar if you've listened to Imagine Dungeons? I was trying to be really, really different with Donnie, but a bit of me leaked out regardless, and obviously that's totally fine. They tend to be deeply physical in their engagement with the world. Comfort, presence, and tangible experience matter to them. Their shadow is a kind of strategic disengagement. They may avoid confrontation so long that when they finally assert themselves, it comes out all at once. I don't know that we've seen that from Donnie yet, but I bet there's a feeling for you, or at least I hope there is, as I've presented Donnie, that there could be a breaking point. We understand that Donnie went from one world and escaped to a completely different world because the world he was born to felt like one that didn't really understand what he wanted. Donnie's journey to discover what he feels like he's best at and the conflict that has with what he feels like he was born to do is a lot to do with me, guys. If there's ever an opportunity on this episode for me to be really intimate, it's now, because it's my information that I can choose to give out. But I think, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, I really started to have some opportunities to get to know what I want. I think as a 9 specifically, I was highly empathetic, still am. And so what I would do is put so much of myself into the other relationships that I have. There's something called the looking glass self. This is an idea from Charles Cooley, a theorist, social psychology theorist. But the looking glass self says that we are always playing a game of charades when we communicate. And so we are anticipating what the other person will say based off of how they view us. And so if I'm ever down on myself in other relationships, the looking glass self promotes me feeling like other people see the shame or see the vice that I feel like I have in myself. I think Donnie had this a lot. Donnie knew he was really good at something, but he felt called to do something else. He felt called to tell stories. He'd experienced these stories and now he wants to tell them. And he wanted to do it through something completely different, a completely different kind of art form. So he goes to school and he learns how to be a bard and he discovers this new magic, even down to the point of turning his battle axe into a yarding, turning his shield into a war gong, getting a flute. Like, Donnie has completely changed his life. That's what it felt like for me to go to licensed therapy about 6 or 7 years ago. I knew that I was equipped with certain things, or I would discover that. Really, my fear was that once I went to therapy, I was going to find out that I wasn't who I was supposed to be. Like, I was acting like Carter, and all the decisions I had made and the relationships that I was in, maybe those were wrong, because they weren't informed. Turns out they were. I was following my gut without knowing it, but it was still a big life change. So now I discover what I want and I act on that. And maybe to others, to some level, it could seem extreme. You know, we talk about in this 9 wing 8, that shadow, that strategic disengagement, that's what Donnie did. He left the crags of Kyber. He left that job that he had. He left a relationship that he was told he needed to be in, because he just had to disengage. It was too much. I think, like Bruce Banner in that way, like the Hulk, he knows that something exists in him, that if he allows it to happen, like if he allows that catalyst moment, maybe people would get hurt. So if you're looking for some tension in the character of Donnie, that's always going to be there. When I make characters, I kind of pick up pieces of things that are already familiar to me. So as we've heard on the podcast, and Doge even talks about this in the music that he made for Donnie, which is perfect, that really I was like, what if a bard was an outlaw country music artist? Enter Johnny Cash. Grew up with Johnny Cash, listening to Johnny Cash all the time, and just loved who he was. Johnny Cash was one of those characters that in my life he's introduced already at this point of being like grounded in what he thinks he is, or grounded in who I think he is. It was kind of like anti-establishment. He's doing all this stuff inside a prison. I love that the first time we ever meet Donnie, our cold open to the entire series is Donnie singing in a prison. To me, that was Folsom Prison, if you know much about Johnny Cash's archives. And so in my mind, just knowing who Johnny Cash was, I wondered like what led to that. Sure, there's a Joaquin Phoenix movie out there that might tell us what his adolescence might have done to inform who Johnny Cash becomes. But that's the stuff that I chose to leave open-ended. I found a grounded character to me that had enough data that I could just mimic. I could just ditto to a certain extent. So I was going to be an orc Johnny Cash, but what was going to be different is I was going to leave something that I was told to be a part of and then go and pursue my own dreams, my own excellence. And so there's these parts that come in. Jordan was telling me the other day that there's these moments that I feel like we're all on this Zoom call together, right? We can all see each other when we're recording. And there's times that I just completely go quiet, normally pretty outgoing. Donnie goes back and forth between this too, of having a lot of opinions, wanting to share all these things, and then just being really reserved. It's this juxtaposition that I've experienced in my life. Sometimes people ask me like, are you okay? Are you doing well? Like, yeah, man, I just need a time to think to myself. I do that a lot when Donnie is writing music. Like if you haven't heard from me in a long time on an episode, it's because something has inspired me and I'm immediately writing about it. I'm trying to make it into a song, into a lyric. And I've had some experience with that. Poetry, art stuff like that, writing songs. I've had that experience with a lot of the people on this podcast, to be honest. I've actually performed with all of them in some way in music. And then we've written plays together. We've written some songs together. And I've just enjoyed that. And so for me, that was a bit of a character quality that I wanted to have. I wanted to be able to speak a different way, some new language. I think that's really fascinating to me. So we're about halfway through our characters. Let's have a quick moment to talk about Raya. So the nine wing one, Ryan and I are both the same Enneagram number. We have different wings though. So the wing one has a peacemaker desire for harmony. We would both be considered peacemakers in this way, with a one's principled idealistic streak. What this usually produces for someone is a deeply thoughtful and quietly value-driven individual. They want peace, but it has to be right. They tend to be gentle, fair-minded, and somewhat perfectionistic in how they engage with the world. When I asked Raya to give me this prompt on how she creates characters, she needed to know exactly how to respond to that. And we laughed about that because that's not a surprise to me. She wants to know how to do things well. And so there was some tension for her, I think, in Sue, who we did find to be thoughtful, quiet, values-driven. Raya was talking about in her prompt that when she started characters, she wasn't totally sure how she does this. So this would mean that she kind of bounces around and does different things every time she creates a new character. She says ultimately that it's bare bones. She thinks she usually starts with a class, right? Logical, meta game player in her tries to make sure that the party is balanced in some way. From there, she takes the character's notes from media, like me, right? We're both nines on the Enneagram, usually piecing together a voice from this character and a personality from that person. So she's saying a bit more eloquently what I was trying to say about some of the ways that I create characters and really how I created Donnie. When she was making Sue for Imagine Dungeons, she played with a few campaigns before and wanted to let the others have first pick on classes. So she wanted to be that balance. I'll go last, which meant that she started as a every party needs a healer kind of person, which no one really wants to play one, she jokes. She knows now that she just wants to not play a healer in 5e. That's the version of D&D that we play. And now she's just kind of a let's roll the hit dice because healing spells are a joke. She would get frustrated, I think, sometimes with the lack of what she felt like she could contribute to the party in some of our fights. And then something traumatic has happened, and I won't spoil that. And now things really change for her. So her original form, though, when we talk about piecing together other stuff from media, was inspired by Kronk, like as in spinach puffs Kronk, specifically that scene. She wanted silly, aloof, and all too ready to follow orders. So the scene where Kronk is in the kitchen and Kuzco and Yzma are altering in and out and never fails to make Mariah laughed. So, Sue was going to be a sous chef, eager to find someone to train under. Then she realized in a collaborative campaign that someone who only says, yes, chef, and doesn't really think for themselves isn't really a fun improv partner. And I think, too, when we talk about relationships and being co-constructors of realities, we start to try and blend together. There's a truth in communication, and really I would say a truth in relationship, in that an objective truth is we really all want to be liked to some extent. Even the person that isolates themselves and says that they're really, I don't know, anarchist to an extent. They don't really want to be a part of any kind of establishment. They don't really want any kind of care. We can either say that's a lie, we can believe that to be their experience, or we can say this still finds a way to show that they do want to be liked in some way. We want to be in relationship and we want to be liked. So in that collaborative way, knowing how improvisational some of the other party members can be, Raya decides she needs to find the space to be able to do that too. So that's what D&D is. When we try and make these moves, we try and make these little tweaks in our lives, it is sometimes a mix of like the emotional, intangible, and then also the stuff that can be formulated, like the equations of things. D&D does this, right? We get values that we have to do from the very beginning, what's going to drive our decision-making, and then we get a sheet that tells us exactly how things are supposed to move forward, right? We're held within the confines of the formulas and a little bit of just chance. Boy, that's life, isn't it? We can have every plan in place. We can spend all of this time putting together our character sheet, our good spell slots, but then we roll the dice and we crit fail, or we roll the dice and we don't quite pass the save. That's just life. And so then how do we navigate that? There's repercussions there. Let's jump to Gage as our dungeon master. So Gage is an 8-wing 9. He's the inverse of me, I guess we could say. In this case, that's called the bear. 8-wing 9s, they're most quietly formidable type. Raw power, self-reliance of the 8 is softened by the 9's stillness, producing someone who doesn't need to prove themselves loudly. Gage himself carries himself in terms of kind of like a quiet storm, I've always thought. He's incredibly capable and perceptive and thoughtful, but I don't think I've ever heard Gage yell. He is so chill. I think what's funny is there's parts of snaps of all the characters that Gage has created that feels the most like Gage, not quite mischievous like Gage could be, but just his spirit. I think there's something about snaps that reminds me a lot of him, and I think that's funny. They're often described, these 9-wing 8s or 8-wing 9s, as having an almost gravitational presence, right? Calm, steady, immovable. They don't bluster or perform. They simply are. How incredible is that? They tend to be deeply protective of those they care about. They have a surprising capacity for patience as relative to other 8s. Gage is so patient with us. I said that earlier, but sometimes we can get carried away. You talk about the improv black holes that we can fall into. There's been times that maybe we've spent close to 30, 45 minutes before we even start the episode. It almost happens every time because some joke begets a new joke, more ridiculous joke. Everybody's laughing. And then Gage, the calm, simply is educator in him, just kind of sits there for a while and then says, okay. There's so many times that Gage will just be like, all right. And you can tell that's a cue for us to just go ahead and get started. So when he's creating characters, he tries to start with a class or a multi-class that he wants to play, and then he works backwards from there. His questions are, how does a person become, right, their class? How do others perceive that character? How does the character perceive themselves? What are their goals? Is there something that he can add to subvert expectations on a character trope, like 2 or 3 small quirks? When he does world building, it's much simpler, he says. He says, if I'm building my own world from scratch, he starts with tone. Then he goes to interesting features of just one part of the world, and then he lets the players start building it with him. He said, if the world is pre-existing, like Eberron, he asks players what type of adventure they want, and he'll find a place where they can fit in. Or he thinks of a final boss and builds the campaign around them. That's something I've done in the past with DM. What's going to be your number one antagonist and how do you navigate that? An interesting thing about antagonists in our lives too, and as we build characters, is there is an ultimate goal that we have. Maybe you've got some villain in your life that manifests itself as an establishment or as a person or an ideal. But ultimately, we also can be our own antagonist. There's these things that come up within us. I think almost every character so far in really even the episodes that have already been released have had that moment of this kind of internal antagonist, something that's holding them back for a little bit. And so again, what happens is there's that bleeding of our real lives into what those characters decide to do. Can we get to another absolute layup of a character in terms of someone who feels very much like the person that we see in real life or that I know? Let's wrap this up on our character analysis with Jordan. The 8-wing 7. Jordan would also say he doesn't really ascribe to the Enneagram. He doesn't really follow it too much, but he's got friends that do. And so he wants to be interested in that, which would say things about his own personality. Again, a lot of us listening to this episode can be like that, and that's totally fine. There's a place for you in the world. There's a place for you in D&D. So the Maverick is what many would call this kind of Enneagram or this character. Someone who's outwardly powerful. They're bold and they have some need for control. And it gets turbocharged by an appetite for stimulation and excess. Big personalities, charismatic, decisive, often magnetic. Move fast, think big. Have little patience for hesitation or weakness in themselves or really in others. They don't really retreat into stillness. They charge forward. This can very much be Fiddlesticks. Let's go ahead and talk about, he breaks it down into two things for role-playing, fun and filling in the gaps. A question that Jordan asks himself is, what would he have the most fun doing? He wanted to be a Swiss Army knife character, good in and out of combat. So a rogue for him makes total sense. But he also knew that he wanted to be able to make dumb jokes and pal around while maintaining at least some gravity if things got serious. So he said fiddles kind of formed out of the clouds of those thoughts. A second question that Jordan wanted to answer is what gaps can be left after others make their characters. So that's a lot of what we're asking. Raya has said this. I had said this is something that I want to do. So some of the synergy of our character party probably comes from the kind of gaps that we want to fill in our characters in general. And so Jordan has quite the understanding that what we are doing is for an audience. And so he wants to make sure that that's fun. So Jordan's desire for everybody to have a good time is even wider in the periphery of the listener who we don't even get to see during this process. He wants you to have fun too. He wants to like break that third or fourth wall. I can never remember. And the guys would make fun of me for that term. But he would break that wall, look you in the eyes and say, isn't this a blast? And so for him to do that, he's got to push through things. He knows that you don't want to hear us kind of like in the silence trying to decide what to do. So Fiddles and Jordan say, nah, I'm going to do this myself. He said he felt like we needed a chaos gremlin and a horny little lady running around. But then, of course, you fall in love with your character and you find that there's depth even to the horny little chaos gremlin anyway. I love that. And that's something that I've already tried to reiterate is that much like our lives, maybe that's what D&D can teach us about our real lives. D&D says, here's these characters. We have some level of formula, maybe like we don't normally do for our own lives. And then D&D influences our real life, much like the other storytelling I talked about in our open. So for Jordan, he had an idea of what he wanted to do, and then he fell in love with that character. Does that correlate with Jordan falling in love with himself? I don't know. I've got a hunch. I'm not totally sure. He could answer that for himself. You could jump into our Discord if you have questions about that for him. Shameless pitch. But it's all just so fascinating, y'all. Dungeons & Dragons as a whole and what that means to us, that character cross-section. So that's a somewhat deep dive into a look at the values that I understand my friends to have, how those inform values in their character creation, for completely different characters and completely different worlds. And just the fascinating intersections of all of those things. My main hope here is that you play Dungeons and Dragons. I want you to give this a shot. It might feel uncomfortable, but there's certain things about D&D that give me some new level of confidence for approaching my own life, right? You get to kind of play an avatar of someone so that you can practice the muscle memory of maybe making some decisions that are normally uncomfortable for you. Yes, the repercussions in D&D are that you could get bit by some giant spider. You could maybe almost die and stuff like that. But D&D is that. We get to take risks, right? It's not like The Matrix, but it's kind of like The Matrix, in which you get to just plug in and go and do things that you're not really capable of in real life. Not like character things, but like physical things. I wish I could play a yarding. I wish I could shoot fire from my fingers sometimes, but I would never shoot a capybara because Mariah, my friend in real life, and Sue, Donnie's friend in the game, would not like that. But you get to kind of bend the rules a little bit and practice what it's like to take risks. And I think that can do so much good for your life. D&D does not replace therapy, but it is its own kind of therapy. When we have new relationships with people, it gives us the opportunity to discover new things about ourselves. In a world that gives us all these algorithms and just spoon feeds us information, I think what D&D and relationship in general provide is an opportunity to get to know a person, to sit down with them and navigate something, to co-construct a reality that can ultimately lead to you picking up some of the qualities that you see in them that might make you a better person, and you being able to share and discover new things that you think might help them. There's such a beautiful humanity part to playing Dungeons and Dragons that you get to actively, with the qualities that you currently possess, bring those into worlds and just play with them. I don't know what other things like that can do. You can read that story and kind of wish that you were a part of it or think about what might happen in that scenario, but you can't interact with those characters. You can watch the movie, but you're not getting to sit in the Dodge Charger by Dom Toretto and experience the adrenaline of how fast he's going, standing there while he says the streets fight back, right? You don't get to be a part of that. You do. It's an immersive experience, but you're just a viewer. D&D lets you be a part of the story. And that sexiness to being a part of the story, that drive, that excitement, sometimes can make you be excited to be a part of the story of your actual life. Interact with new people, try new things, take some risks. D&D is a wonderful classroom, and you get to bring your family into it. And I absolutely love that. So I hope that you use this listening experience as some kind of inspiration for playing D&D. I want you to roll for some initiative. How about that? Roll for inspiration.